There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. And what a Wednesday it has been so far. Here we are just at midday here in the Central Time Zone. But Alabama representatives, House members in Washington have had a busy morning. We're going to get into that in just a second. Plus, the president addressing the situation with the ceasefire now going into a... permanent mode, going from a temporary ceasefire going forward. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Get audio from President Trump from just about an hour and a half ago. Coming up on the show, and we're going to set this up here. One of the voices that you'll hear in just a second, AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, who now is under threat of an ethics complaint from none other than Adam Schiff. I'll explain more what happened, but Congressman Byrne will join us in hour two, facing an ethics complaint from Schiff on this. You understand more in just a second, as a group of Republicans try to make their way into what I think Congressman Byrne called a star chamber going on there inside the House. We'll get to that in a second. Also coming up in the second hour of the show, Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall is going to join us. A couple things I want to talk about with the Attorney General. Number one, the Drug Take Back Day that's now, I don't know how many years we've been doing this in Alabama, but he'll talk more about it. It's been 10 years, been maybe more than that. But he's going to talk about Drug Take Back Day going on this weekend. But also, I want to delve into this opioid litigation. Remember, we had the story earlier this week, and it was pertaining to the fact that one time AG of the state, then senator, now in private practice attorney, Luther Strange, representing the members of the Sackler family, that are the family behind Purdue Pharma. At the same time, he was in an event up in West Virginia, and he was lobbying, for lack of a better word, lobbying other Republican attorneys general to take the Purdue Pharma deal, to take the deal, and to not challenge with other lawsuits. I want to see where we stand in Alabama with this, and that's why we're going to talk to current Attorney General of the state of Alabama, Steve Marshall, about the state of Alabama, how much money this settlement could mean. Will we take the settlement? Will we file different suits? Does it prevent other people from filing suits? And we'll talk to the AG about that coming up a little after 1 o'clock right here on Midday Mobile. All right, so let's get into what's happening today. And if you haven't heard, I've put a couple things out on the Twitter feed. And the way it went down this morning, you had a group of over 20 Republican House members that made a run, really, on a secure Capitol room. Now, out of the 20, locally, Matt Gaetz, there out of Florida. Of course, AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. We're going to get the audio here in just a second. And AL5's Congressman Mo Brooks, which we'll get some audio from him in a second as well. We're heading into that secure Capitol room that's known as the SCIF, right? The SCIF, the SCIF, that secure meeting room. And they were going in to protest the closed-door impeachment hearing that was going on at that point. According to a report from news outlets out there, and Yellowhammer News reporting this, that Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense Laura Cooper was sitting down to testify in the SCIF when, quote, the roughly couple dozen Republicans stormed through three different doors. Representative Bradley Byrne yelled in committee chair Adam Schiff's face, but Schiff didn't engage. Other Democrats, including Val Demings, screamed back at both Byrne and Representative Louie Gohmert, who were yelling about the process. Then they said Cooper left the room and the hearing was postponed after the Republicans refused to budge. One anonymous member of Congress reportedly told CNN, "It was the closest thing I've seen here to mass civil unrest." Now, notice the this is, I mean, two, and Matt Gaetz from just across the border, but Mo Brooks, Bradley Byrne, both part of this. And you have a yelling match with Adam Schiff. Adam Schiff now going to seek ethics complaint against, I don't know about Mo Brooks, but he is, I think, against Congressman Byrne. Like I said, we'll talk to Congressman Byrne next hour. They got some votes they're taking right now, but he's going to join us next hour live here on the show. Mo Brooks' office sent out a press release explaining what happened, stated as followed: Congressman Brooks and his GOP colleagues proceeded to the secret Capitol basement hearing room and chanted for socialist Democrats to let us in. End quote. When a staffer opened the door to tell the congressman they could not enter, the GOP congressman brushed past the staffer and rushed into the Intelligence Committee's secret impeachment proceedings star chamber. Chairman Adam Schiff then halted the proceedings rather than making them public to the congressman and other American citizens. Immediately thereafter, heated words erupted between, once again, this comes from Congressman Brooks' office, between socialist Democrats and the GOP congressman, who sought to make public the sordid process by which the socialist Democrats seek to repudiate and trash the 60 million American citizens who voted for Donald Trump for president. And we'll get into this, and we'll get comment here from AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, and we'll get some audio as well from Congressman Mo Brooks. That coming up, and also later in this hour, the presser from earlier with President Trump, and then hour number two, if that's not packed enough. Stay close.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
I think this is what it looks like. I really do. So the president yesterday, President Trump, saying the Republicans need to step up. He said that he felt like he would be impeached. I called that shot a while ago, right? I mean, of course. I mean, it's not like any kind of reading the tea leaves any differently than anybody else would, looking at just the number of Democrats and the votes in the House. But the president also yesterday in his talk was, and we'll get to today's discussion from the president, but yesterday, talking about this impeachment, he said he needed Republicans to step up. Republicans to step up. And specifically, I think what's going around is, would Republicans, even those that don't want to, you know, attach themselves at the hip to President Trump, should they rise up to talk about the way the proceedings have gone down in the House and continue to go down inside this secret chamber in the SCIF with Adam Schiff? And that's what happened today. That's what we're seeing today. So, you know, give you the story that you had a group of a little over 20 Republicans. Okay, so members of the House. You had 22, I think, something like that, went downstairs to the SCIF and went on in. Two of those, Alabama representatives, AL1, our Congressman Bradley Byrne, AL5's Congressman Mo Brooks. Remember, those are the two to vote to censure the president as well with his move over Turkey and Syria. So they were there. Also, Matt Gaetz, of course, you know, full-time, 100% of the time defender of President Trump. That's like Matt Gaetz's thing, right? He was there. No surprise. Steve Scalise was there as well. But I'll get some audio here. This is from a little bit earlier this morning. Here's Congressman Bradley Byrne describing. This is recorded right after the whole thing went down. Here's Congressman Byrne.
I've just come from inside that star chamber room where they've been trying to conduct an impeachment hearing in secret. The witness they had in that room was a Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense. I'm on the Armed Services Committee. They would not let the witness go forward with us in the room, even though we're on the Committee of Jurisdiction. This is a sham. And they just showed the sham that it is by the way they conducted themselves just now. They're also threatening to file ethics complaints against those of us from the House that wanted to be in the room. And that shows more than anything else that they'll stop at nothing. We're fighting as hard as we can. We need more people to fight with us.
All right. So more people, because it was, 22, 23. Which you got to ask. I mean, it shouldn't be. The Republicans should be able to do better than that in the House. But those were the initial group that made that move. Was from Alabama, two that I know of, and I looked through. I didn't see anybody else. I saw Congressman Mo Brooks and Congressman Bradley Byrne. Here's Mo Brooks from after the event as well, speaking. He's there with a group of those Republicans that stormed the skiff.
By golly, if they're going to do it in public. Don't hide it from the American people. Right. Show your face where we can all see the travesty that you are trying to foist on America and the degradation of our republic that you are engaged in. We demand open proceedings. The American people deserve nothing less. Their representatives in Congress deserve nothing less.
By the way, nice use of the word foist. Did you hear that, Dalton? Congressman Brooks is going to join us, I think, tomorrow in this hour, and I will comment on his use of the word foist. You know, there's not enough foisting or discussion of foisting in today's world. It's one of those where he's bringing it back, and I'm going to support Congressman Brooks to bring back the discussion of foisting. Congressman Brooks went on to say, bear in mind the significance of what we are talking about here today. We are a republic. Close to a million Americans have fought in wars beginning with the Revolutionary War to give us the rights to control our own destiny. And what the Socialist Democrats, as Mo Brooks likes to call them, seek to do today is to thwart, to disregard, and repudiate the votes of 60 million Americans in the 2016 elections. Okay, so some of those comments. And then in a little bit afterwards, then the CNN reporters were there at the House office, but it looked like it was in the halls of the House office building where, you know, that leads over to the chamber. They were in the House, it looked like House office building, where the CNN reporter comes around the corner. You will see the video, I linked it up. It's Congressman Brooks trying to get the elevator, whatever, come around the corner, and he puts the mic in his face and talks about it as well.
Mr. Brooks, the opening statement says very clearly, this is not, this is
okay,
what
bill. The opening statement doesn't make any difference.
Let me finish what I'm saying. Let me finish my question. Look, he says very clearly.
You should not be relying on it.
Why should not be relying on his public testimony?
If you were in a court of law, would you rely just on the opening statement of an attorney?
Well, let me ask
the first witness call, or would you have cross-examination? Would you allow witnesses to determine, to explore whether the first witness's testimony was accurate and correct.
I'm asking about the substance of what he said. He
said that doesn't make any difference. We don't know whether what he said is true or not because of the sham process that's being used.
Yeah, and I agree. Superbomb on the text line says they're fired up. Indeed, today, Superbomb, they are fired up in Washington, and a lot of this is going on in the House side. They're in the austere body of the Senate. We do have some audio coming up in a little bit as Senator Richard Shelby points the finger at fellow members of the Senate for not moving forward with the budget process. We'll get to that coming up later on in the show. Not from Alabama, but from Louisiana, Representative Steve Scalise speaking out about what Schiff is conducting there in the SCIF. Right. I know it's confusing. Adam Schiff, Representative Adam Schiff, and what's going on in that secure room there where they, you know, you heard Congressman Byrne and Brooks both call it a star chamber. Here's Steve Scalise. Well, I thought we're trying to get, what happened to the, is it gone? Is it there? Okay, I don't know. Well, we're trying to get Steve Scalise in just a second. I don't know why we're not getting the audio. We'll have to figure that out. All right. Also, let me lay out a couple more things here on this. Now, the president, once again, this is, we haven't heard back when the president spoke earlier, and we're going to get to that audio here shortly. It was all Syria. It was all Turkey. It was all that discussion. But I imagine that the president has got to have something to say, because he asked yesterday for Republicans to stand with him, and now they did. And I wonder, you know, and there you heard the calls for more to step up. Will the president come out and talk more about, these brave Republicans did this, so now will we get some more? I have a feeling we'll hear something to that effect either today or tomorrow. Also, the other question that we were talking about this morning with Jeff Poore when he joined us, would this House investigation be best on television? But think about this. Think about I imagine there are the channels that would not be airing it would worry about this. I think it'll be, if it happens, it would be a big-time ratings getter. A BuzzFeed, and once again, it's coming from BuzzFeed, but a BuzzFeed story saying that the Trump impeachment inquiry coming soon to a television near you. They write, for weeks, the impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump has been happening almost entirely behind closed doors, leaving a confused American public to follow an incredibly complex investigation, largely through the reporting of leaks and vague comments from members of Congress. Now, that's telling, because it's BuzzFeed, no bastion of conservative thought. And there's their opening salvo, opening paragraph. And I think that's one of the complaints you just heard from Congressman Byrne and Brooks, is you have this very important discussion. Impeachment should not be taken lightly. And this is going on behind closed doors. And the only information coming out is what the members, the Democrats in charge, leak out. Well, they go on to say that it's all about to change. The impeachment inquiry is coming soon to a television near you, a move House Democrats told BuzzFeed News they hope will shut down Republican complaints about secrecy and help shape public opinion as the 2020 election draws nearer. Quote here from Representative Tom Malinowski, Foreign Affairs Committee member, said, "We've had some very compelling testimony from a number of witnesses so far, and in some ways, all of them would make compelling public witnesses, the ones that I have heard. We're going to have to make some choices in the end, but I think it'll be very important for the American people to see everything that we are seeing, and they will." See, it sounds to me, God forbid, but you have some agreement going on between some Democrats, and it sounds like many Republicans in the House. Open it up. Let the American people see it. It goes on to write here. They go on to write, "Witnesses have been testifying nearly every day, and Democrats have been moving expeditiously, which is their favorite descriptor, to wrap up their impeachment investigation in the month since House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced her support for the formal inquiry. But the public hasn't hardly seen any of it so far." How about zero? We've seen zero of it. "No one can say yet whether the public hearings will start, but Democrats are aiming for a full floor vote impeaching President Trump by the end of the year. Then they'd have to move with this soon." You know, they originally were talking about doing this by Thanksgiving when they all head to the House, right back to district. But maybe something could change fast, but it seems like that's going to be problematic. A quote here, another from Representative Malinowski, said, "There are still a number of depositions that we have scheduled that we would like to complete. I don't think it should take much longer. I know that's not totally helpful to you, but I'm not just withholding things. But, you know, it's not like we have decided on a date," end quote. So, also, House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer said yesterday morning that he also hoped public hearings would tamp down Republican complaints about the process. I think it would eliminate them, right? Except for some. Hoyer said, "Our Republican colleagues continue to say these are secret hearings. They are certainly not open hearings. However, every member of the committee who's a Republican is there. Every member has a right to ask a question, and time is equally divided between the two parties. I don't know where they're getting their secrecy stuff." Let me go back to this. Let's run that clip of Congressman Byrne again, okay? Because we're going to get a chance to ask him this next hour. But Steny Hoyer saying anybody who has right to be there can be there, Republican or not. And Congressman Byrne said,
"I've just come from inside that Star Chamber room where they've been trying to conduct an impeachment hearing in secret. The witness they had in that room was a Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense. I'm on the Armed Services Committee. They would not let the witness go forward with us in the room, even though we're on the committee of jurisdiction. This is a sham. And they just showed the sham that it is by the way they conducted themselves just now. They're also threatening to file ethics complaints against those of us from the House that wanted to be in the room. And that shows more than anything else that they'll stop at nothing. We're fighting as hard as we can. We need more people to fight with us."
Okay, so Congressman Byrne says he has rights to be there, has status to be there. But then in the story, Steny Hoyer saying that everybody who has the rights to be there, no matter what party, can be in there. Once again, Congressman Byrne saying he wasn't allowed in there. So we're trying to get to the bottom of this when we talk to the congressman in just a little bit. All right, coming back, we will get the audio from President Trump earlier this morning, at, I think 11 o'clock our time, as he spoke about the situation in Syria, what the situation is now and going forward, also the movement of the troops coming home, those kind of things. There's a lot to it, and we'll get into it here in just a little bit, about 15 minutes of discussion from President Trump. He also tells Europeans to come get their ISIS prisoners and go try them in their own country. He talks a lot in this about saving a lot of lives of the Kurds, keeping blood off the sand in those places. Also, he talks about another American military deployment that he doesn't want. And we'll get into that when we come back, right here on the Daymobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Hey, y'all, I'm Sean. Text line open for you at 343-0106. We'll read through some of those coming up in just a little bit. Plus, on the way, before we finish up today, your chance at the armbands that get you down in front for the Marshall Tucker Band. That is happening, that show happening on Sunday out of the Greater Gulf State Fair. And we got those special armbands for you. Somebody's going to win sometime between now and 2 o'clock, so be ready for that. And you would use the phone number at that time at 343-0106. All right. Also on the way next hour, Attorney General of the State of Alabama, Steve Marshall. Lots to talk about with him. Number one, this Purdue Pharma settlement. What does it mean for Alabama? Will we take the settlement? Will there be another lawsuit? Also, the National Drug Take Back Day going on this weekend. We'll talk to him about that. And at 1:30, you heard him earlier. He was part of the group of Republicans that stormed the SCIF that was being run by Adam Schiff. I just like the rhyme. He was one of that, I think, 22 Republicans that stormed the SCIF. Congressman Burns going to join us at 1:30. All right, we will get the audio here. This is President Trump from now about an hour and a half ago, as the president was discussing the moves here in Syria. President tweeting earlier this morning, big success on the Turkey-Syria border, safe zone created, ceasefire is held, and combat missions have ended. Kurds are safe, and I have worked very nicely with us. Captured ISIS prisoners secured. I will be making a statement, and this is the statement he made.
My fellow Americans, I greet you this morning from the White House to announce a major breakthrough toward achieving a better future for Syria and for the Middle East. It's been a long time. Over the last 5 days, you have seen that a ceasefire that we established along Syria's border has held, and it's held very well, beyond most expectations. Early this morning, the government of Turkey informed my administration that they would be stopping combat and their offensive in Syria and making the ceasefire permanent, and it will indeed be permanent. However, you would also define the word permanent in that part of the world as somewhat questionable. We all understand that, but I do believe it will be permanent. I've therefore instructed the Secretary of the Treasury to lift all sanctions imposed on October 14th, in response to Turkey's original offensive moves against the Kurds in Syria's northeast border region. So the sanctions will be lifted unless something happens that we're not happy with. This was an outcome created by us, the United States, and nobody else, no other nation. Very simple. And we're willing to take blame, and we're also willing to take credit. This is something they've been trying to do for many, many decades. Since then, others have come out to help, and we welcome them to do so. Other countries have stepped forward. They want to help, and we think that's great. The nations in the region must ultimately take on the responsibility of helping Turkey and Syria police their border. We want other nations to get involved. We've secured the oil, and therefore a small number of U.S. troops will remain in the area where they have the oil. And we're going to be protecting it, and we'll be deciding what we're going to do with it in the future. In any event, by the moves that we've made, we're achieving a much more peaceful and stable area between Turkey and Syria, including a 20-mile-wide safe zone. An interesting term, safe zone. That's the term we're using. Hopefully, that zone will become safe. Thousands and thousands of people have been killed in that zone over the years. But it's been sought for many, many decades, and I think we have something that's going to be strong and hold up. Turkey, Syria, and all forms of the Kurds have been fighting for centuries. We have done them a great service, and we've done a great job for all of them. And now we're getting out. Long time. We were supposed to be there for 30 days. That was almost 10 years ago. So we're there for 30 days, and now we're leaving. It was supposed to be a very quick hit, and let's get out. And it was a quick hit, except they stayed for almost 10 years. Let someone else fight over this long, blood-stained sand. I want to thank Vice President Pence and Secretary of State Pompeo for leading the American delegation so successfully to Turkey several days ago, along with National Security Advisor O'Brien. I want to thank them very much. The American delegation negotiated the original five-day ceasefire that ended Kurdish fighters to safely leave. It just got them to a point where, frankly, they were able, it enabled them to get out, to go, and move really just a few miles in a slightly different direction. So this enabled them to do so. Countless lives are now being saved as a result of our negotiation with Turkey, an outcome reached without spilling one drop of American blood. No injuries, nobody shot, nobody killed. I have just spoken to General Mazlum, a wonderful man, the commander-in-chief of the SDF Kurds, and he was extremely thankful for what the United States has done. Could not have been more thankful. General Mazlum has assured me that ISIS is under very, very strict lock and key, and the detention facilities are being strongly maintained. There were a few that got out, a small number, relatively speaking, and they've been largely recaptured. I'm also sure that he will be issuing his own statement very shortly. We had a great talk, but we've saved the lives of many, many Kurds. He understands that. The war was going to be vicious and probably not very long. And I'm very happy to have been involved in it, as are our Vice President, our Secretary of State, and all of the other people on our team. By getting that ceasefire to stick, we've done something that's very, very special. But by getting the ceasefire after a tremendous amount of really tough war for a very short period of days, that is something very special. Our troops are safe, and the pain and suffering of the three-day fight that occurred was directly responsible for our ability to make an agreement with Turkey and the Kurds that could never have been made without this short-term outburst. Should Turkey fail to honor its obligations, including the protection of religious and ethnic minorities, which I truly believe they will do, we reserve the right to reimpose crippling sanctions, including substantially increased tariffs on steel and all other products coming out of Turkey. We are now an economic powerhouse like never before, and very importantly, like no other. Our economic might is stronger than it's ever been, and our competitors are not doing very well. We also expect Turkey to abide by its commitment regarding ISIS as a backup to the Kurds watching over them. Should something happen, Turkey is there to grab them. Further, we implore European countries to come and take those fighters that the U.S. captured and bring them back to their countries for incarceration and for trial. Until just recently, Europe has been very unresponsive in doing what they should have been doing for a long time. Now is their chance to finally act. American forces defeated 100% of the ISIS caliphate during the last 2 years. We thank the Syrian Democratic Forces for their sacrifices in this effort. They've been terrific. Now Turkey, Syria, and others in the region must work to ensure that ISIS does not regain any territory. It's their neighborhood. They have to maintain it. They have to take care of it. There were some political pundits who responded to Turkey's offensive in Syria by calling for yet another American military intervention. I don't think so. But halting the incursion by military force would have required deploying tens of thousands of American troops against Turkey, a NATO ally, and a country the United States has developed a very good relationship with, including President Erdogan. The same people that I watched and read giving me and the United States advice were the people that I have been watching and reading for many years. They are the ones that got us into the Middle East mess, but never had the vision or the courage to get us out. They just talk. How many Americans must die in the Middle East in the midst of these ancient sectarian and tribal conflicts? After all of the precious blood and treasure America has poured into the deserts of the Middle East, I am committed to pursuing a different course, one that leads to victory for America. Through much work, we have done things that everybody said couldn't be done. Today's announcement validates our course of action with Turkey that only a couple of weeks ago was scorned. And now people are saying, wow, what a great outcome. Congratulations. It's too early to me to be congratulated, but we've done a good job. We've saved a lot of lives. Most importantly, we have avoided another costly military intervention that could have led to disastrous, far-reaching consequences. Many thousands of people could have been killed. The last administration said Assad must go. They could have easily produced that outcome, but they didn't. In fact, they drew a very powerful red line in the sand. You all remember the red line in the sand when children were gassed and killed, but then did not honor their commitment as other children died in the same horrible manner. But I did honor my commitments with 58 Tomahawks. 8 long years after President Obama's ill-fated push at regime change, U.S. troops are still on the ground in Syria. More than 500,000 people are dead. Hundreds of thousands are terribly injured, and millions more Syrians are displaced. It really is a nightmare of misery. Across the Middle East, we have seen anguish on a colossal scale. We have spent $8 trillion on wars in the Middle East, never really wanting to win those wars. But after all that money was spent and all those lives lost, the young men and women gravely wounded so many. The Middle East is less safe, less stable, and less secure than before these conflicts began. The same people pushing for these wars are often the ones demanding America open its doors to unlimited migration from war-torn regions, importing the terrorism and the threat of terrorism right to our own shores. But not anymore. My administration understands that immigration security is national security. As a candidate for president, I made clear that we needed a new approach to American foreign policy, one guided not by ideology, but by experience, history, and a realistic understanding of the world. We are building up America's military might like never before, investing $2.5 trillion since my election. But we will not be depleted. We will not happen again. It will not be allowed to happen again. where our military is depleted, fighting in areas of the world where we shouldn't be. When we commit American troops to battle, we must do so only when a vital national interest is at stake. And when we have a clear objective, a plan for victory, and a path out of conflict, that's what we have to have. We need a plan of victory. We will only win. Our whole basis has to be the right plan, and then we will only win. Nobody can beat us. Nobody can beat us. I want to again thank everyone on the American team who helped achieve the ceasefire in Syria, save so many lives, along with President Erdogan of Turkey, a man I've gotten to know very well, and a man who loves his country. And in his mind, he's doing the right thing for his country. And we may be meeting in the very near future. I also want to thank General Mazlum for his understanding and for his great strength and for his incredible words today to me, but me just as a representative of the United States, because he knows that we saved tens of thousands of Kurds. And we're not talking in the long term, we're talking in the short term. We're talking something that was going on immediately and something, frankly, that was planned for a long time. The job of our military is not to police the world. Other nations must step up and do their fair share. That hasn't taken place. Today's breakthrough is a critical step in that direction. Thank you all very much, and God bless America.
All right, so there's President Trump from about an hour and a half ago. Talking about the sanctions being lifted on Turkey, the ceasefire standing, urging, as you heard, other nations in the region to get involved in this. One thing I do wonder, I asked this question yesterday, maybe I'll get a chance to ask this of Congressman Byrne next hour, leaving troops there to secure the oil facilities, okay? I wonder if where those are set, because now you have actively the Russians and the Russians now fighting alongside, or were fighting alongside and patrolling alongside the Turks. I'm bothered by, you know, we keep going back to the fact that we have a NATO ally. The NATO ally shouldn't be doing joint operations with the Russians. It bothers me. But the situation where we've left the people I care about, our men and women, our military, behind to secure oil facilities, are they in a situation like Berlin, is it a Berlin airdrop where you had a surrounded area? Will they have a conduit to get in and out of there? How do we resupply those folks? Do they have just the Turks and Russians around them? Where are the friendly troops there? I'm not saying that Turkish troops will attack. I think they know better, but they're not like we have our close fighting allies right there with us. President going on to saying we're achieving a much more peaceful border between Syria and Turkey. Talked about the number of lives saved, no American bloodshed or injuries in this withdrawal. He also talked about saving the lives of many Kurds there. And he said that Turkey could go back under sanctions if they don't live up to the deal here. And we'll see how far they can stretch. I'm sure Turkey and Russia will see how far they can stretch that rubber band before it pops. Also, on the general, while the president talking about specifically what's going on there in northeast Syria and Turkey, you heard there at the end of the concluder laying out a path that is a path of reducing the United States from being in places that, as the president says, there's not a clear United States interest. And if we did go in somewhere, we'd have a plan of victory. All right, coming right back, we'll grab some comments on this. Also, like I said, in hour number two of the show, we'll be joined by Congressman Bradley Byrne, one of those who stormed the skiff today. I think they're 20-something, between 20 and 30. That number keeps changing online. So between 20 and 30 Republican House members trying to bust up in the joint. That's my vernacular. Congressman Byrne may be facing an ethics charge from Adam Schiff. He's going to talk to us about that and more. And also, coming back right after 1 o'clock, we'll talk to Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall. Lots to come, y'all.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
That's a good text, Chris. I just saw that. I know you sent it earlier. Chris said, you mean CNN was not in the skiff room when the Republicans showed up? That means the Republicans don't leak. Yeah, that's right. They were didn't have the cameras ready for them, but they were in the hallways outside or actually over in the House office building and got that audio from Congressman Brooks. The audio you heard from Congressman Byrne, they recorded themselves and uploaded. It wasn't through any TV camera there, but I guess they caught Congressman Brooks. I don't know, caught. That's not the right word. They questioned Congressman Brooks. Looked like from just the shot, I was guessing it was back in the House office building, so out of chambers and back in the office building. Believe me, I imagine there are camera crews and reporters running helter-skelter right now in Washington, and that will continue for sure. We'll talk more about that coming up. And also, where's Steve's Texas? Good point, Steve asking, aren't there Republicans on the Intelligence Committee? There are, yeah. There are, and I didn't go back and look. It's either 8 or 9, something like that. They're of course, the minority party in the House, and therefore the minority party in committees. So I'll ask Congressman Byrne about that as well. But I can tell you this, that they don't get to make the rules of the procedure that's run by the majority, who are the Democrats there. All right. Before we run to the news, two things real quickly. Go to our Facebook page, if you can, and check out the link for Real Men Wear Pink. I'm one of the American Cancer Society's Real Men That Wear Pink. You'll see us out there in the pink ties and lapel pins as we're raising money for the American Cancer Society and breast cancer research. Talked about that this is a thing very close to me, as my mama is a 20-year survivor of breast cancer, and this is my very small part to try to give back and hopefully continue those great the rate of cure and the rate of, well, not cure, but the rate of being able to fight off breast cancer and be in recovery and survive has gone up and up and up. And we continue to push that with better and better research. And that's what we're raising money for through the American Cancer Society, which, by the way, 4,000 women in Alabama will get that diagnosis just this year. If you'll go to that link on the Facebook page, anything you can donate, it's got a link there. It takes you through to the American Cancer Society, but under my picture there, so I can compete with the other dudes in Real Men Wear Pink. I appreciate your donations. Thank you very much. And as we do this and head to the news, Dalton, let's open up those phone lines and take caller number 6. Got a pair of armbands for you to get in right down in front and check out the Marshall Tucker Band Sunday out at the Greater Gulf State Fair. Caller number 6 at 343-0106. The tickets are yours.